Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. First, allow me to thank everyone here for attending today's talk. And I pray for your prayers so that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone here and anyone else who may be listening. And I beg your forgiveness for any offenses I may have committed unknowingly during the course of the past recent days or any days. Thank you. So today there are five verses, and four of them have no purports, and I will just read the English, and I will be starting from verse number 9 of Canto 9, Chapter 2. Yes, that starts from text number 10. So I'll start with the translation. Let me just give a little brief background of this for those of you who may not have read it or who were not listening to the classes. What has happened is that one of the ten sons of King Shradadev, namely Prashadra, he was assigned to the service of protecting cows. And he would stand with a sword guarding the cows so that no tigers or lions would come and attack them and try to eat them. And one night there was a very heavy rainstorm, and there was not much light due to the clouds, and a tiger came and approached and attempted to attack one of the cows, and the cow began mooing loudly, and Prashadra heard this and went to try and attack the tiger and to stop the slaughter, since that was his job, to protect the cows. So because it was dark and because it was a very highly emotionally charged moment, he lashed out with his sword and accidentally he killed the cow instead of the tiger. The tiger was scared and ran off. So what his guru, Vasishta, heard about this, he appeared to be very aggrieved. And as a result, he cursed Prashadra to be born in his next lifetime as a Shudra. And it is commented by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as well as Srila Prabhupada, that this seemed to be a rather harsh, a severe type of punishment for having done something, namely killing the cow, but he killed it without intention. It was not his desire to kill the cow. His desire was to kill the tiger. And it was done in the best of spirits, the best of faith, as a protector. So it seemed to be out of line with proper justice, that he had been given a punishment which was far beyond and above. It is mentioned in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that the normal penance that would be given for something like this would be he would be given some penance to perform, or he would be given some means of atonement. Because, as I said, there was no intention to harm. It was done in the best of intentions. But that was not the case. And as I go on into the talk, I will try to explain to the best of my ability what actually had happened and why a great sage like Vasishtha, who is quite well known throughout the Puranas, in the Mahabharata, would stoop to give such a punishment as this type, which is again apparently very unseemly for such a sage. We must understand that Vasishtha Muni is not a run-of-the-mill sage or rank-and-file guru. He is a highly elevated sage who is the spiritual master of not only King Dasarath, but Lord Ramachandra, Lord Bharat, and his two brothers, Shatrughan and Lord Lakshman, as well as many of the officials of the Solar Dynasty. So he cannot be thought of as just a low-level guru who simply made a mistake. Such a guru rarely makes such mistakes, unless they are under the force known as Yoga Maya. And I will get into that in due course to explain how this is so similar to a situation that occurs much later on to King Pariksit. So let's move ahead on the verses now. This is number 10. When the hero Prashadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of Brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. We move to text number 11, 12, and 13. Thereafter, Prashadra gained relief from all responsibilities. He became peaceful in mind and established control over his senses. Being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus, Prashadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service of the Lord, and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. Is the first word avam up there? Yeah, okay. Evam vritovanam gatva drishtva davagnim utitam tenopayukta karano brahma prapa param puna muni evam vritovanam gatva Vishva davagnim utitam tenopayukta karano brahma prapa param muni evam vrito vanam gatva drishta davagnim utitam Teno payukta karano. Brahma prapa param muni. Vaishnavis, please. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. With this attitude, Prashadra became a great saint. And when he entered the forest and saw a blazing forest fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. Janma karma chime divyam evam yo veti tat vataha. Kyakvadeham puna janma naiti mameti sorjana, which means, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Unquote. Prashadra, because of his karma, was cursed to take his next birth as a Shudra. But because he took to saintly life, specifically concentrating his mind always upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became a pure devotee. Immediately after giving up his body in the fire, he reached the spiritual world, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Mam Eti, as a result of his devotional situation. Devotional service performed by thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that although Prashadra was cursed, he avoided the terrible consequence of becoming a Shudra and instead returned home back to Godhead, as stated in Brahma Samhita 5:54. Yastvindra gopam atavedram aho svakarmam bandhanurupa palabhajanam atanoti karmani nirdadati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamari purusham tammaham vajami. Those who engage in devotional service are unaffected by the results of their material activities. Otherwise, everyone, from the smallest microbe up to the King of Heaven, Indra, is subject to the laws of karma. A pure devotee, being always engaged in the service of the Lord, is exempt from these laws. That's good to know. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakeha Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I offer my humble obeisances onto his lotus feet. There's much that we can all learn from this particular very short story, as it is mentioned in the purport. It was the karma of Prashadra to receive this curse from Vasishtha Muni, and interestingly. To be cursed as he was for such a unintentional offense, as I mentioned before, seemed quite unseemly, seemed out of sorts. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as well as Srila Prabhupada, mentions this point. Why such a severe punishment? So there's always the hand of God is behind everything. These things don't happen just by impulse. They don't happen merely by whim. Especially when we're dealing with persons such as Prashadra, who was a son of Vaivasvati Manu. He was trained. He was brought up and raised in an environment in which there was nothing but true and pure spiritual talk. So he was a person who had good qualities. Should a person with such good qualities, such a person who intended to protect the cows, should he be punished so severely like that? What could be the reason? Why would Krishna do something like this? So we can also refer forward to King Pariksit. King Pariksit was cursed by Samipya Muni's son, Sringi, when Sringi learned or heard that the king had draped a dead snake over his father's neck while his father was in deep meditation in Samadhi. And when he heard that, he was so outraged that he immediately pronounced a curse on the king that he would die in 7 days. Again, we have King Pariksit, a highly advanced, self-realized soul, trained up by King Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, the twins, had great training. And so we have a very odd or interesting situation there. And Srila Prabhupada explains that very well. And that he mentions that it was the desire of the Supreme Lord to bring King Pariksit back home, back to Godhead, in a very expeditious, very quick way. And one of the ways of doing that is through this curse. So Sringi cursed King Pariksit that he would die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. Now Sringi also was raised by Samipya Muni, a great sage. He knew right from wrong. He knew good from bad. He knew what to do and what not to do. It's not that he was some urchin wandering around the streets. Sringi was a cultured, developed young man. And yet, he was overwhelmed by this force of Maya. It's the same force that Srila Prabhupada refers to in the purport, when he refers to Vasishtha appears to be overcome by Tamaguna, which is Maya. So, what would be the purpose of this? So, in fact, Samipya Muni was very upset and very disturbed by that his son would do such a thing like this. But the hand of God is working all the time, throughout, everywhere. So even King Pariksit, the reason that he was cursed by Sringi was that, of course, he had put the snake, dead snake over Samipya Muni's shoulders. And he had acted out of character. King Pariksit, we know, he's a Kshatriya, but he's a sage. And he had been out hunting, and he was very thirsty. And when he entered the kutir of Samipya Muni, who was in Samadhi, he asked, "I want some water." Now, here's a person who has great, perfect self-control. If he doesn't want to eat, he cannot eat for a day or two or three, and it won't bother him. He's above and beyond this. Same with water. He can control his senses, control his mind, control his emotions, control his reasoning. And yet, he could not help it because he was under the force of Yogamaya. So he came in and he said, "Well, I want some water. Give me some water." Now, in his normal, ordinary consciousness, he would see that the sage is, he's in a trance. He doesn't hear you in this high, advanced, elated condition. You can't hear, you can't see, you don't smell, you don't taste, you don't feel. You're deeply involved. The senses are withdrawn into the mind is withdrawn into the soul, and the soul is connected with the Supreme Lord. So it is like one sitting in a soundproof closet, so to speak. You don't hear anything. Now, normally, a person like Pariksit, he would know this, but he didn't know it. This is the interesting aspect of Yogamaya, and it's generally reserved for persons who are advanced souls. And it is generally used by the Supreme Lord to enable certain activities or certain things or certain events to take place, which will be ennobling and beneficial and helpful for all human beings. And in the case of King Pariksit, since he would have 7 days to live, he wasn't upset. He wasn't disturbed. He wasn't rattled. He wasn't shaken. In fact, he was wondering when he was going back to the kingdom, why did I speak that way? It's not my normal way. And he felt somewhat regretful of what he had done. So, he would use those 7 days to hear from Shukdev Goswami. And many sages would come. And at the bank of the Ganges, Shukdev Goswami would utter the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Suta Goswami, he would hear it, and he would transmit it to many other sages in Naimisharanya. So this Bhagavatam would get spread all over the world. And we here today are the recipients and the beneficiaries of that curse. So that curse becomes a blessing. It only appears to be a curse, outwardly, exteriorly. But in truth, it is not a curse, it is a blessing. Since we're here listening to this, every day we get the opportunity to hear these translations, to hear these purports. So it was a way in which the Lord expedited the departure of King Pariksit to the eternal world. And that is a blessing. He didn't have to wait another 100 years or 200 years. He would go in 7 days. Much of which Shukdeva Goswami would be teaching King Pariksit. King Pariksit already knew. Remember, he had Yudhishthira as his spiritual master, his grandfather. So he was already enlightened. But for the benefit of all of the sages who are sitting and listening, And for the benefit of all humanity down to the ages, he asked so many wonderful and excellent and useful questions which we ourselves would ask. And Shukdeva Goswami, of course, answered these questions in such a way that would make the Bhagavatam clear and understandable and usable for our practical and spiritual life. So we have a somewhat similar situation here. We have the Vishishta Muni pronouncing a curse on an apparently blameless young man. How does Prashadva, how does he accept this curse? We can see his character. He's peaceful. He's calm. He's controlled. He's not worried. He's not upset. He's not disturbed. If he were materialistically minded, he would say, please, please think again. Please give me a break. He would complain. He would protest. He would say, can you take back the curse? But he wasn't worried about it. He wasn't upset by it. He was peaceful. He was calm. He was controlled. He was what we should be ideally. And he knew that whatever time he had left, he would utilize every moment of it in order to become more and more God-realized, more and more devoted. And as it's mentioned in the purport, he became perfect in his devotional service. So this is the reason behind this curse. It is a motivating circumstance. If he knew that he was going to, at the end of his life, be reborn in the family of a Shudra. Now, what does it mean to be a Shudra? Shudra, they are persons of very low character generally, full of lust and anger and greed and envy and illusion and madness and pride and sloth and gluttony and so many qualities and characteristics that if one expresses them and one contacts other persons in the mode of ignorance, as generally Shudras are, often in the mode of ignorance, not necessarily, but generally, because those are some of the qualities I just mentioned are characteristic of people in the mode of ignorance and persons in Shudras. They generally serve the higher classes so that their qualities can be refined to a higher level. So knowing this, he would not, Prashadva, would not want to be born in a Shudra family, because it would mean that he might make decisions which would entangle him deeper and deeper and deeper in maya, in illusion, in ignorance. He would become worse and worse. And who knows, after that Shudra birth, he may go into another birth and another birth. The entanglement becomes greater and greater and greater. It's hard to say exactly what one will do. Generally speaking, when a person has some advancement, Krishna awakens the person, reminds the person of what spiritual life is, and encourages them in his path. But depending upon the associations one has, will depend upon what a person does and how a person utilizes that higher knowledge. He may not utilize it. He may utilize the knowledge of the Shudras by contacting them, by engaging with them, by associating with them, by being involved with them, by making decisions with them. You become more and more implicated in material nature. And it can cost, that's why it says that very often persons are known as, they become bound to the material world. They never get out, because the entanglement is so great. It's like going into a whirlpool, around and around and around. At the beginning, you can see the light, but as you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, you can't see it anymore. And you don't even know that there is such a thing as a spiritual world, or there are spiritual qualities, or that there is spiritual qualities, or that one there is an alternative way of living. So what we have here is that this became an incentive for Prashadra to work hard, to work intensely, to work conscientiously on not being subject to this curse. The only way that could happen is he would have to enter a high transcendental state, because when one is in the high transcendental state, he is no longer subject to karma, no longer subject to guna, or the modes of nature. He's above the modes of nature, unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken by them. They have no bearing upon him. And this is what he wanted. This is how he could become free of this lower birth that was pronounced upon him. And so as we can see, reading again some of the things that he did, because it's really a wake-up call for all of us. He woke up by learning that he could become a Shudra in the next birth, which could be a terrible situation and lead to a deep fall down. The same thing could happen to any of us. Today everything is fine. We're in the temple, we're looking at the deities, we're associating with devotees. But if we don't take it seriously, if we don't think firmly, if we don't realize the great blessing that Srila Prabhupada has given us, if we take it for granted, if we think that it's coming to us because we did some good deeds, we can lose this path. And if we lose this path, it could be lost not for 1, 2, 3, 10, 20, 50, 100 years, but hundreds of lives. The miseries that we see outside in the material world, even when we give people books, many of them will look at the books and others put them down. Some will take them because they have some good karmic reactions. They'll read it and they'll go on reading it and be benefited by it. But many, for the most part, they're not interested because they're so entangled, they're so absorbed in their materialistic sense pleasures. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Hardly is there a thought of God in their day. And whatever thoughts about God there are generally robotic or mechanical. Okay, it's a holy day, so we honor the saint or we honor the Lord. And then next, what else is new? Now, it doesn't have any significance, doesn't have any depth, doesn't have any profundity. There's no meaning to it. So life is basically just for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Birth, death, disease, and old age. This is what life is. And we have to be careful. So many devotees I have known, not just ordinary devotees, but spiritual masters, GBC members, sannyasis, who felt that they had it knocked. They had it, everything was fine. They became proud due to the applause, due to the honor, the glory, the praises. Instead of giving them to Krishna, where they belong, because after all, Krishna is the source of all good that comes to us. I try to repeat this little motto that I have every morning to tell me who I am. I am nothing except what Krishna makes me. I have nothing except what Krishna gives me. I know nothing except what Krishna teaches me. I do nothing except what Krishna enables me. And I want nothing except pure love of Krishna. Because if I have pure love of Krishna, I will have everything. Nothing will be denied that I need. So if we become proud, if we become puffed up, we become vain, conceited, because we have some quality, we have some power, we have some ability, which has been given by Krishna. Therefore, any praise that we get, any honor that we get, any glory that we get, any applause that we get, it must be given to the source. As Krishna says, I'm the source of all spiritual material worlds, which includes all good qualities, all abilities. So therefore, if everything ultimately truly comes from Krishna, and I would go so far as to say we can't speak if it is not for Him. We can't walk except for Him. We can't will except for Him. We can't think except for Him. We can't create except for Him. He is the enabler. He is the helper. He is the one who is setting it in motion and making us think we're the doer, because that is what Maya is all about. We have come into this material world for one purpose. For what reason? To become lords. Lord, I do this, do that. I'm your master. Listen to me. So if we've come in to become lords, then the way that is protected is to, through illusion, make us think that we're doing something that really is being done through the agency of the Supreme Lord. So that's what fall ego is all about. I'm the body. I'm the extensions of the body, the designations of the body. And as a result of those designations, that's me, that's me, that's me, this is me, this is me. I did this, I did that, I did this. This is mine. And I begin to think I'm important, I'm valuable, I'm glorious, I'm great, because you applaud me, you honor me, you celebrate me, you bow down to me. So if you do that, I mean me personally, I'm speaking as recent people think. So if we begin to think like that, if we don't give it away, give it up to Krishna, who is the true recipient, who deserves it all, and who is giving us so much mercy, so much kindness, so much sweetness. He feeds us, clothes us, shelters us, gives us beautiful environment, nice association, for which we should be thanking Him every second, every moment. But we forget Him. We forget to be grateful. Every time we forget to be grateful, this is our pride. This is our sense of import, self-importance. This is Maya. Therefore, when we are actually receiving something from a devotee, you get Mahaprasadam outside there. Some devotees, they take it and they say, "Oh, thank you, Rabindranath. I very much appreciate this. It's very kind of you. You don't have to do this. You can just leave it there and give it out to your friends. But you give it out to everybody. Unstintingly." And then some devotees just take it and put it in their pocket or start eating it as if, you know, like it's all coming to me. I deserve it. I earned it. I did 3 hours of washing pots, so therefore I deserve to get the maha. What kind of a mentality is that? You did 3 hours of cleaning the pots. You owe zillions of hours to Krishna to clean the pots, considering all the offenses and the sins and the wrongs and the mistakes that we've done over the millions and millions of years. So when we have this feeling, this is what humility is all about. It's feeling that we owe the Lord something, and understanding that He is so great, He is so grand, so wonderful, so kind, so compassionate, and understanding and loving. When we have that consciousness ongoing, then we develop this humility, and whatever comes to us, we feel we don't deserve it, and therefore we thank the person for it. But we go beyond thanking the person, because really we thank Krishna. Because it is Krishna who is inciting that person to give it to us. All love comes, sometimes we are praised. Sometimes I see a devotee say, no. Or, no, don't give me this. This is coming from Krishna. Prabhupada never rejected when something was given to him. A devotee would give him whatever it would be, a watch, or would give him a flower, or would give him a garland. Prabhupada never threw it back in his face and said, no, I'm not worth. He accepted it. Graciously, as coming from Krishna through His devotee. And we must see all gifts that come to us in that same light. And if we see them that way, we'll treasure them and cherish them and love Krishna all the more, because we understand and know that it is coming from Krishna, who loves us so dearly. And when we have this understanding that Krishna loves us so dearly, we will love Him even dearer than we do today. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Are there any questions or any comments that you'd like to make? You want Mahaprasad? Okay, go for it. Sorry I held you 5 minutes too late.
bigger class, they're considered like the meds. However, I was wondering where the reference is for the Shudras generally having these biases that you mentioned. I've never heard that before, that they generally have these biases.
Well,